is Mark Strassman, reporter with Grid World. We're about to talk to Carl Kesselman, who is the director, Center for Grid Technologies, Information Sciences Institute, University of Southern California. Welcome to Grid World.
Hi.
How did you end up in grid computing? Because when you were a student long ago, there were no grid computing facilities, institutes, or otherwise. How did you find yourself where you are now?
Well, I would say I found myself where we are because we created it.
Okay.
I would say somewhat immodestly that myself, along with my colleagues at Argonne National Laboratory, played a significant role in creating what we now call grids.
And okay.
That's kind of how I ended up there.
About when were you doing that?
The work that we've been doing is now going on close to 10 years. We originally started some of our very early work in what eventually became the Globus Toolkit back in probably 1994-1995, looking originally at how we could utilize the internet, and which was at that point primarily associated with research institutions, but there were some advanced networking experiments going on that was looking at gigabit networks over the wide area and things like that. We were looking at how we could build computations that used distributed resources over the network.
So the idea was you were already transferring information, but you wanted to figure out how you could virtually transfer computing power.
So that was kind of originally what we were doing. Of course, back then that was just really as the web was starting, but we were moving files and data around with FTP, and there was Telnet and remote access.
Right.
But we were really interested in looking at how to build up more general kinds of activities over the network. There had at that point been some early work done on an area that was sometimes called metacomputing, which was linking together large supercomputers to do computation. And there was certainly some work going on in that area, and I would say what we really did was try to look very systematically at understanding what kinds of capabilities you would need and what kinds of functions you would need in the network to do this in a very general way. And that's really kind of what gave birth to our work in grids and the creation of the Globus Toolkit.
Okay. Was the thinking of the people there then more like Mallory's when asked about why he wanted to climb Everest, because it's there, or because you saw some specific applications that you felt was important to get done, or you just wanted to sort of solve the general problem?
Certainly one of the things we've been doing from early on has been applications work, but I think more it was we had a vision and saw an opportunity that the full power of the network would be realized not just by passing around web pages, not just by, you know, doing a remote access, but actually using it as an integral part of our computing environment. So I think it was really more driven by a vision of the way things should be. And it actually can't claim too much credit for this, I suppose. If you go back to some of the very early writing as to why the ARPANET was created by Licklider, and you look at some of Doug Engelbart's early writing and some of these seminal papers, there was this vision that the network was more than just a vehicle for moving bits around, but created a foundation for a whole new kind of infrastructure, or a whole new kind of society, if you would. And so we definitely saw the time was right to really kind of move forward and make significant steps.
Okay.
Progress.
In terms of the timing, so this is essentially the network is the computer with a vengeance. I don't know whether Sun said it before you did or not.
Yeah, in a way. Actually, though, I tend not to like to think of it as just creating a big distributed computer.
Okay.
I think it's more than just doing computing. It's a whole, if this makes any sense, in some sense it's a whole social fabric.
Explain what you mean.
Well, you know, it's not just we're doing computing or we're doing data. It's a general infrastructure for how you go about sharing things.
Right.
And how you integrate that into your workflow or your daily environment. So we like to look at what Grid is about. It's not about computing. It's not about data. It's about the formation of community and creation of shared space.
And how is that made easier by having the technical underpinnings that you're working on creating?
Well, it gives you the ability to create that space and manage this space. So how do you determine who's in and who's out?
Right.
How do you determine what the capabilities are? How do you create and enforce the rules of engagement? You know, no dogs allowed in this park.
Right.
You know, so what's the equivalent of the no dogs allowed in this park kind of mechanism in these shared distributed spaces?
Okay, I want to get back to that a little later, but why don't we focus on the Globus Project. What is it? Where did it come from? What's it doing now?
So the Globus Project was originally started in about 1994, 1995, and it was originally, Ian Foster at Argonne and myself, and then Steve Tiki, who is a guy who is at that point kind of a young programmer, working in Ian's group. And so it started with the idea of building basic tools that would enable you to do this kind of sharing, and it's just kind of taken off since then. So it produced a core set of software that we used to build some fundamental infrastructure deployments to lots of different classes of applications, and since then it's been fairly widely used in an academic setting, and over the last 2 years or so has seen increasing use in the commercial sector.
Okay, now you're talking about the Globus Project or the Globus Toolkit?
Well, they're kind of, at some level, they're indistinguishable, because the Globus Project, I suppose, has been this ongoing collaboration initially between my group and Ian's group, and has since turned to this thing called the Globus Alliance, which is a little more broad-based. And,
right.
And we produced a variety of research results and so on, but one of the main outputs of the Globus Project has been this open source grid toolkit called the Globus Toolkit.
Okay, is it free as in speech or free as in beer? Can you download the Globus Toolkit for free and use it, or what?
Yeah, so we made a decision early on that in order to build infrastructure that you needed to have ubiquity, it needed to be widely available. So we adopted a very liberal open source licensing policy from the very beginning. And so our software is available for free download and use with no restrictions. It can be commercialized. You can pretty much do whatever you want with it. If you change it too much, you can't call it Globus.
Okay. How does it compare to Linux and its status as an open source tool?
Well, I'm not an authority in this, but
right.
We don't, I don't believe in the GNU license. There's no viral nature in our license agreement.
Okay.
So if you want to make a product out of it, you're free to do that.
All right. And what kind of products can people make out of it?
Oh, well, all kinds of things. People can build end-user applications. People can build services. People can build infrastructure. So there's a variety of things that people have been doing. The work on the commercial sector is really just spinning up. But if we look at what's happened in the scientific space, there's a wide variety of really interesting deployments and applications that have been built on top of the Globus Toolkit.
Okay, in case people want to hear it instead of read it and click on it, can you give the URL for the toolkit?
Yeah, so the place to go for information about Globus and access to all of our papers and all the relevant information would be the Globus website, which would be www.globus.org.
No W's?
I think I said
www.globus.org. Okay, good. It's a big question, so you don't have to answer it at complete length, but what is grid computing used for now, mostly?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, the initial use of grid computing was primarily in the science and engineering space, so there are a number of science projects that are international collaborations or national-scale collaborations that are using grid computing to do data analysis, large-scale simulation, earthquake engineering simulation. You know, we're looking at everything from the formation of the universe to the smallest trying to discover the next subatomic particle.
And now, is grid computing particularly well-suited for addressing these kinds of problems?
Yeah, these large-scale science problems tend to be large collaborations with huge amounts of data and huge amounts of computing and a lot of sharing going on. And grid computing really provides an appropriate infrastructure for building those types of collaborations. So let me give you an example, which is one of my current favorites, is some work that's going on under the sponsorship of the National Science Foundation, and it's something that I care about living in Los Angeles, which is understanding the response of structures to earthquakes.
Right.
And to do this, they use these large physical test facilities that you actually build models or even full-size models of these structures, versions of these structures, and you shake them around or you push them under stress and strain. So we've actually done these experiments where we've taken large structures that might be too big for any one test facility, put, say, one column of a bridge in Illinois, another column of a bridge in Colorado, and couple them together with a simulation model.
Right.
And actually conduct this experiment in a distributed way and have lots of outside people observe what's going on and do entirely new types of experiments. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that you just couldn't do without this kind of infrastructure. And then more recently, we started to see some commercial grid activity, primarily in what sometimes is referred to as enterprise grids, so primarily within the bounds of a particular organization. And I think if you read the popular technology press, you can see many examples of them. I know Charles Schwab has talked about it. IBM has talked about it.
Well, talk a little bit more about the applicability. We're agreed that grid computing is ideally suited for these kind of scientific problems. Is it any less well-suited for the typical operations that go on within enterprises, particularly transactional enterprises or things that just require a little bit of in and out but not really a lot of intensive calculating?
Right. So I think a common mistake is to associate grid with just high-end.
Okay.
So people say, well, I don't have big computing or I don't have big data or I don't have a big network, so I don't need grid. And that's actually, I think, a mistake. What grid is really about is how do you do sharing of all kinds of different underlying capabilities? And certainly, and any organization that has requirements for sharing, in particular cross-organizational or cross-institutional sharing, is an appropriate target for grid technology. And I think those types of applications are actually pervasive. So we talk about how do you federate policy, how do you discover capability, how do you drive operations across different organizations and institutions, things like that.
So does that mean that a federal, state, or municipal government that has many divisions and does a lot of computing but not necessarily high-end type could benefit from grid computing?
Absolutely. So any organization that needs to share capabilities, and also another big element of grid is dynamic.
Right.
So that has kind of the need to respond to the situation and share capabilities, I think, is a candidate for using grid technology. And so we typically, we use the term virtual organization to describe these things. These are these multi-institutional, dynamic federations that are constructed, tend to be problem-specific. You put them together to solve a problem, and then you go off and do something else. Unfortunately, within medium to large-scale corporations, they look more like different companies than the same company. So even within a state or a single company, they have a lot of those characteristics and can benefit from a technology that's kind of designed to support these dynamics and multiple policy, multiple administrative domains.
Have you found in your experience that the technical problems are less daunting than the sociological or social psychological or political politics with the politics within an organization that keeps people from sharing, essentially?
That's a really good point. I'm not sure there are any less daunting. Certainly, I would say they're both equally challenging problems. That part first is this, the basic technological issues, and then certainly understanding the sociological impact is an important aspect of this. Organizations that don't understand sharing are going to be less inclined, or you've got some overhead you need to overcome. But I think it's also important to really be clear. When we say sharing, we don't mean give away for free.
Right.
So sharing means, we tend to use the word controlled sharing. There's policy. There could be payment. There could be all kinds of restrictions that are being placed on this.
Okay.
And you know, I would tend to believe that at the end of the day, the organizations that will engage in these sharing arrangements and have this flexibility will end up being more effective, either in terms of time to market or cost to market or efficiency or what have you. And ultimately, I think this kind of Darwinian effect will take over, and you'll find that you won't be able to do business without these types of relationships in place.
Okay, without endorsing anybody or disparaging anyone, could you name some big companies or small ones that are active in the grid space, either on the scientific side or the commercial side, that you think are making contributions and people can look at for more information about grid computing in a commercial context?
Well, I think certainly there's been recent public announcements by various companies. If you look at, for example, the companies who participate in the Global Grid Forum, that would be an indication of the types of companies that are involved.
Okay, are they generally enthusiastic in getting involved? Are they holding back, or what's the general attitude of the big software and hardware companies?
I don't want to speak for any particular companies,
right,
but there certainly has been a understanding of the problem and the need to solve the problem and various degrees of enthusiasm, probably ranging everywhere from slightly interested to highly enthusiastic.
Okay. SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, was an early pivotal grid computing application. Just say a little bit about it. And I was going to ask you how it's doing, but I guess they haven't found any alien intelligence yet. Is it still going on?
Yeah, it's still going on. In fact, I was recently in a meeting with a fellow who was responsible for that, was speaking, and they're kind of working on a next generation of that. So SETI represents a particular type of, it tends to be called distributed computing, infrastructure. It's kind of an example of what's sometimes known as peer-to-peer.
Right. Are you distinguishing that from grid computing?
Well, so you can use grid computing to do peer-to-peer. The peer-to-peer technologies, to the extent that I'm familiar with them, have tended to focus less on general mechanisms, less on issues of policy and security. Than we address it in grid computing. Peer-to-peer, I think, is certainly an important technology and plays complementary roles at various levels to what's going on within the grid space.
Okay, does that model of having millions of individual PC users get linked up in distributed computing or a grid to provide power to do something, is that a viable path to grid computing, or does it really have to be clusters in organizations linked together in meta clusters that create the grid?
Yeah, so I guess there's two answers to that. I mean, one is the availability of all these, millions or tens or hundreds of millions of free cycles is certainly compelling and is certainly a non-trivial resource. I would say that to date, anyone who's yet to create a business model around that, they've tended to be focused primarily on more altruistic types of volunteer activities. And then again, I want to say that grid is not just about doing computing, and that's certainly one element of it. But to say I don't need massive computing, therefore I'm not interested in grid, I don't think is the right way to look at this. That grid is fundamentally about sharing all kinds of resources, and a computer could be just one of those types of resources.
Okay, is the reason this the SETI model for in a commercial setting isn't really viable is because if you're going to sell the cycles, the people who are providing them are going to want to get paid, and the cost of administering and accounting for and paying them is going to be greater than the amount of money you can make by selling the cycles?
Yeah. I mean, there's a number of problems. Now this kind of what's sometimes called opportunistic computing, again, is a pretty powerful tool, and there are large companies that do that within the enterprise, and that gives them a significant compute resource that they can leverage, and certainly you shouldn't underestimate the amount of computing that SETI at home does. But in terms of, I mean, within the enterprise, the companies tend to own the resources, so they can dictate what happens. And
right.
Outside the enterprise, as I said, it tends to be altruistic, and to date, nobody has really come up with a model where there's enough kind of security and control and payment and so on to make a compelling business case for these types of environments.
Okay. Speaking of security, you said that this distributed one isn't really that secure.
They've tended not to be.
Right. Say something about the importance and the current state of the art in providing security for good, high-powered, professionally run, centralized. Well, then it's centralized, but under serious control institutions that are running grids. What's the picture on security for that?
Yeah, so the challenge in grids is that we need to be able to make some statements about security and do enforcement in environments where you don't necessarily control all the pieces.
Right.
So a lot of certainly our initial work has been on ways of unifying authentication models for being able to do single sign-on, to be able to delegate rights from one site to another,
right.
To be able to talk about how we do policy federation and policy enforcement. So that's been primarily where our activities have been.
And then how successful is that? I've heard here and there that there's never been a security breach in a grid system. Is that true or an exaggeration, or how close to that rate are you?
Yeah, one would want to be careful about never statements that have the word never in it. I don't believe there's been any break-ins that I know of that can be attributed to grid software.
Okay, and is there a problem of people looking at problems that are being run, unless everyone is in this really the same family and the same group there, people spying on other people's data as it comes to their node to be processed, that people worry about?
Not that I know of. The communities that we've tended to not work in adversarial communities, so
right.
it's tended to be communities that have some kind of existing relationship.
Right.
You know, where there's motivation to